Anybody want to share a win they've had this week or the last few weeks? Don't be afraid. It can be anything.
I'll say it.
Go ahead.
I took a week off training because I was feeling a bit of burnout coming along. But literally, I did nothing for 7 days. I would walk to my bed, to the car. That was as much activity as I did. And then I've come back this week, and my energy levels are just absolute next level.
Awesome.
And I can't stress enough for myself anyway, how much a rest period does.
Yeah, man. Like, I mean, it's a strange dynamic, right? Because when I used to work with, like, call them general population, right? I don't normally associate you guys as general population because you're all a little bit more advanced, a little bit more long in the tooth with training. But like, I actually find like when I used to work with general population, the problem was actually getting them to work out. And actually, like dealing with a lot of you guys, it's actually a bigger problem to get them to take rest. And if you're noticing like all like the classical signs of like overtraining, like irritation, fatigue, like sleep starts to get affected by it. And a lot of guys now, like you'd be struggling to say, I did it with a client recently where I was like, dude, take 4 days off, just no training. You can do a little bit of steps, a little bit of aerobic work if you want to. And he came back to me the next week and I was like, oh, so how did it go? And he's like, didn't do it. I was like, okay. So like, yeah, man, it's great that you actually managed to do that. And so you did absolutely nothing. So no training, just basically from.
I looked a bit of ocean swimming, but that was about it.
Nice. That is a cool win. Anybody else? Al, how we doing?
All good, Greg. Another busy day here. How about you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Getting late
Good.
in the evening here. You got any wins for us from the last week?
So is that for me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a win. Yeah, Coach Andrew and I have been working hard, gearing for the next races coming up. And the other about a week and a half ago, I for some reason still trying to figure out pinpoint why. I was just in a little funk mentally, physically. But we've been focusing on sticking to the plan, meal plan, sleep, breathing, just all the fundamentals, the daily top five, and work my way out of it. So feeling much better and back at it hard.
You must be Andrew's client who does the Spartan races, right?
Yes.
Am I right? Nice to put a face to it. He's mentioned you before.
Okay. Yep, we're gearing up for I fly out in about 2 weeks. Races on the November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, so getting pumped, getting ready, strengthening these ankles, getting the mind right.
You guys are a different breed, man. Genuinely. Well done. Anybody else want to share a win before we get started? Come on. No? All right, boys. So
I'll
today,
speak.
go ahead, John.
So I guess a win for me is getting some clarity in terms of what's going on in my shoulder and being able to start to plan around it.
Yeah, man. Like, I mean, you've been struggling with that for a long time, and there was a lot of rehab going on, and with some success, right? And then something would happen, it would fall back to form. So it's nice to see that we actually got an idea of what's wrong.
And what the PTs are saying is that I have a lot more functionality than they would expect with what's going on in my shoulder.
Oh, nice. No, that's good news. So at least then we can plan ahead for what we might need to do rather
Right.
than there was a little bit of guesswork going on, right?
Right.
No, that's great
So
news.
I'll call that a win.
Yeah, it's a win. It's definitely a win. So today I wanted to go through because it's becoming such a big deal. And I believe Huberman actually released a podcast. Has anybody listened to the Huberman podcast on peptides yet? Anyone want to give me a break? I haven't listened to it yet. I know that's terrible of me. I should be up to date with Huberman at all times. But has anyone got any like takeaways that they took from that podcast? No?
I'll
I'd
just
say
share it,
that.
Greg. Oh, go for it. Were you talking,
No, go
John?
ahead. Go ahead.
I didn't listen to it all the way through. The gentleman that he had on, I think, has a practice in South Carolina or something like that in the States. And he did mention from his practice and his experience seeing more of a benefit in his clients that took injections versus oral BPC-157. So.
Oh, cool. We're not going to go through BPC-157 today, but like just briefly touching on that, like a lot of you guys might have heard of BPC, tends to be a peptide that's isolated from the stomach anyway. But what it's supposed to do of like real benefit is it increases angiogenesis. So like it'll increase healing systemically throughout the body. So wherever that may be, it doesn't necessarily have to go right by the site, but it's like it's got really cool stuff. Even orally, if you want to use it. So anyone who's any suff ever suffered with like leaky gut intestinal permeability, it seems to have some really cool benefits around that as well. So it's not just when people think about BPC, they seem to just think about it as like, muscle injuries and things like that. It will heal tissue pretty much anywhere. So it's quite a cool little peptide. Like in a lot of the research, they've tried to poison rats with it. To no success. So like there doesn't seem to be too much of a top end with this about how much you can use. Obviously you'll run out of money at some stage. Ooh, good question. I would imagine so. I've never used it with a hernia before though, but I would imagine it would be helpful. But today I'm not going to touch on any of the restorative peptides, I guess, if you want to call them that, or any of them based around the immune system, or any of them based around muscle growth directly. Today, we're going to talk about the fat loss peptides, and I'm going to touch on a few of them. Like you'll see from one of my slides, like there's so many currently going through phase one, phase two trials, and experimental trials in animals, that you could literally sit for a day going through all these peptides and all their mechanisms. But I want you guys to know the ones that are out there that can be used for fat loss and how to use them, I would say, more effectively than what you might see for like a typical type 2 diabetic, right? Because when you look at the research on Ozempic or tirzepatide, like the real classical ones that we see, you obviously hear about all the downsides as well, right? So like everyone's talking about Ozempic face, Ozempic butt. But I think we can use these drugs a little bit more carefully and look for what I suppose what you'd like to call the minimal effective dose. So not having to use the dosages that they use in studies because we're not trying to target the fact that you're a type 2 diabetic, right? We're looking at their effects on appetite suppression. So let's get started. First of all, does anybody have any experience using peptides yet? I know Bear, you have. Anybody else have used a peptide yet? No? Okay.
I did, coach.
Yeah, that's right. We've got some going at the moment. One of them that you're using, we're touching on. Now, the other ones are a little bit different. But let's hold on, just let me make sure everything's up ready to go. Tis, tis, tis. Okay.
Greg, have you used any?
I've messed around with most of them at some stage. The only reason why I've messed around with most of them is just to actually see. So the five that I'm going through today, I've used all of them at some stage, to see their benefits, to see the downsides of some of them, which I'll touch on particularly one of them for me, but just to show that individually people respond quite differently to these drugs, because tesofensine is one in particular that I'm going to touch on today. And Like I tried it for 3 days, and one of the side effects is anxiety and agitation. Man, like I was awake for 3 days. Now I've spoken to other people that have used it with none of those effects. So it does vary dramatically from person to person. But let's go through it, and you can ask me personal questions as much as you want as we go through. I'll use myself as a human guinea pig, no problem. I say it's in the name of science. So what are the most effective peptides for fat loss? And then we'll touch on like which ones are the best? What do each of them actually do? So if like people stack these drugs, right? So they'll use multiple different variations of them, not really knowing the mechanisms at play. So like if you don't know what they do, you may be using two and three different drugs at the same time for fat loss, but they're just doing the same thing. And then we'll talk about when and where, how much of each, and like cycles. So how long do you take them for? And then we will touch on the downsides. And there is downsides to these drugs. Like I know you'll go out and like sometimes I listen to, and I like most of his stuff is Jay Campbell, and he only seems to talk about the upside of these drugs. When realistically there is a nastier side to some of them, depending on how you take them, depending on your own genetic makeup as well. And it needs to be something that's taken into consideration when we use them, because we always want to think about lowest effective dose for us, because some of these are still experimental. So some of them haven't even made it out of rat studies yet. And you know what the bodybuilding sphere is like? People, when they find out something works for what they're trying to achieve, they're not going to wait for phase one, phase two, or phase three trials. They're just going to take them and experiment on themselves, which is up to you, but you got to have the information before you try and do any of that. We'll go through what I think are probably the most effective in terms of the top five. This is something that I found recently, and this is the future of treating obesity. This is what it looks like. So these are all the drugs either going through preclinical, phase one, phase two, phase three, or approved. And when you look at the very bottom, like when you look here, semaglutide, which is the one that you guys know about. Semaglutide is Ozempic, and then tirzepatide, which I believe is called Mounjaro, is becoming slightly more popular now. They seem to be like the only ones that you guys would know that have actually made it to approval. The rest of them are still in a very much early phases, but yet we all still take them, right? Because they work. And I always thought there was never going to be a phase where we could trick the body in a healthy manner in order to lose weight. But I think that time is very much now, as long as we use them safely and effectively. The ones that I'm going to touch on today, tesofensine, which I briefly mentioned, my experience, GLP-1, GIP, and glucagon agonists sounds very fancy, but what they are is the That would be Ozempic, would be a GLP-1 agonist. Tirzepatide is GIP and GLP-1. And then the newest version called retatrutide is a combination of all three. And we'll go through what that means, right? So why would you want to, like an agonist means it increases them. Why would you want to increase those three incretins and hormones? And then we've got like not quite catchy names yet, because they're still very much in early study. Is 5-Amino-1-MQ SLUPP332, which I'll just call SLUP, which is a little bit easier. And then tesamorelin is slightly more widely used now and mentioned quite broadly in both research and in the health sphere for its benefits with fat loss. And they so like the first two, these are appetite suppressants mostly. Now they target appetite suppression in two very different ways. These two tend to play on the mitochondria. So these have And they all might have, and like same with these a little bit, they have health benefits outside of just like an appetite suppressant and just mitochondrial function. I say just, like there's loads of other health benefits outside of fat loss that some of these might give us. I'm not going to touch on them at all today, otherwise we'd be here for a long time. But just be aware that some of these drugs can be used for other things as well. And then tesamorelin is more based around growth hormone. They all touch slightly different mechanisms in the body. So you could take all five of these at once, right? And now, don't get me wrong, it'll cost you about $1,500 a month. Wouldn't be cheap to use it at the dose that you want. So we'll try and be a little bit more specific about what might suit you if it's something that you want to use at some stage down the line, and kind of a combination or a stack that you can use for fat loss. Now, tesamorelin still gives me the shakes to say its name. But what it is, it's a triple monoamine reuptake inhibitor. So a reuptake inhibitor you might have heard before. So like an SSRI or an antidepressant, is a serotonin selective reuptake inhibitor. What this one does differently, and all it means is when we release serotonin, norepinephrine, sorry, in the States, you guys would think of that as noradrenaline. When we release them into the synaptic cleft, so this space between neurons, they hang around for a certain amount of time, do their action, and then they get reuptaken and recycled or detoxified. But what this drug does is well, first of all, it's important to remember, it was initially thought they were going to use it for brain degenerative diseases like Parkinson's or Alzheimer's. They used it in those patients, realized it didn't have much of an effect, but they saw this side effect where people lost a significant amount of weight on it. But when you block the reuptake of these neurotransmitters, what you find is they play on different things. So, like dopamine is very much responsible for, particularly when it's low, is responsible for cravings and addictive behaviors. Now, swing to the other way can cause, when it's really high, it can cause fairly similar things. But dopamine in the right amount seems to lower our cravings for food, alcohol, cigarettes, gambling, those kind of things. So that's one benefit of it. When it increases serotonin, people often mention when they start SSRIs, they don't feel hungry anymore. It increases just standard satiety. So we're not as hungry day to day, hour to hour. And then norepinephrine plays on the calories out side of things. So norepinephrine will increase lipolysis or like the liberation of fat from fat cells. So this isn't just an appetite suppressant. It does seem to increase metabolic rate. And as you can see there, like fat oxidation a little bit as well. And I'll talk about a little bit later when I talk about the downsides of this for me personally, anyway, and what it shows in the research are some of the downsides of tesamorelin. Now, in some people, they notice like a lot of benefits. And you hear people talk about they felt almost euphoric when they used this drug. And some people talk about just feeling generally happier and more regulated on it. That will probably be some sort of genetic factor involved. So like your ability to be able to break down these drugs can be very genetic. So you might have heard like it gets churned around a lot, like methylation and COMT, these enzymes are responsible for breaking down particularly dopamine and norepinephrine. So if they don't work properly, you might find that these are hanging around for way too long. So that's where you start to see affected sleep. You might see agitation or anxiety, right? GLP-1, GIP, and glucagon agonists. These are, so this is like the this is like the miracle drug, right? So when we increase GLP-1 or GIP, these are incretins that get released from the stomach, and they do a really cool thing where they'll release just the right amount of insulin. So you find that people who eat excessive amounts of food or bad food, they'll get these big spikes in blood sugar, then they'll release loads of insulin in order to counteract it, and they get stuck in this swing of blood sugar all day. This regulates it really well, really well. But also, GLP-1 in particular plays on the brain a lot. So it lowers brain inflammation, it dampens appetite, and it resensitizes the brain a little bit to a hormone called leptin, and will allow the brain to become much more anti-inflammatory, but to be much more regulated in terms of food and appetite. And then, like the newer version, retatrutide, which I've tried, which I'll give you my experience. Will also increase glucagon, which will liberate stored carbohydrate, increase fat oxidation. So it might be good for the calories outside of the equation as well. So these triple agonists are the newest version of it. Tends to have less side effects now. So, but we'll talk about that, what those side effects may be a little bit later. With these are like, so I'll also mention tesofensine, the triple agonists. They're quite extensively studied in the humans. 5-AminoOne-MQ and the SLUP1 that I'll talk about in a second are not. So these have been tested in mice, and that's it. So it's really important to remember that. Now, these two don't seem to have many downsides that they've figured out yet. So we haven't seen like dramatic side effects even in mice, right? I know it's not exactly a great model, but they seem to have less side effects. But where these drugs, I think, or like small molecules might be really beneficial, even in aging and longevity. As we age, you guys might see, like everyone's talking about NMN, so nicotinamide mononucleotide, or NR, nicotinamide riboside, as these anti-aging molecules, or it's basically just niacin or B3. But as we age, what niacin does, or NAD plus does, is it's responsible for passing electrons around our mitochondria. I know that sounds rather fancy, but basically, it's responsible for our ability to be able to produce energy effectively. And I think Ben's mentioned that before. Our ability to produce energy dictates everything. So it's our ability to obviously be able to get up and go. It's also our ability to be able to fight disease, fight neurodegeneration, fight cancer, all these different things. But as we age, obviously, that begins to lower. So what happens is when we're trying to recycle NAD, and make more of it, so use old NAD that's already been used and recycle it through a scavenging pathway. As we get older, or for people that were obese at one stage, this enzyme called NNMT, which is nicotinamide methyl transferase, don't quote me on that. I'm sure that's what it is. That will methylate NAD and it becomes inactive. So we don't recycle NAD effectively anymore. So mitochondria then becomes affected, and we have weak or poor functioning mitochondria. So this 5-AminoOne-MQ blocks that enzyme and means that we can produce NAD more effectively, produce energy more effectively, burn fat more effectively, burn carbs more effectively. So it might be of benefit in stuff like metabolic syndrome and all these other things. So it seems like it's going to be a really cool molecule that can be used widely, not just for fat loss. And then we get into SLUPP332. It activates an ERR. So like that's when you see ERR, the first word is estrogen. People worry because they hear the word estrogen, particularly males. It's an estrogen-like receptor. But it's not actually, estrogen doesn't actually bind to it. But what it does is it's been coined an exercise mimetic drug. So it almost tricks the body into thinking it's exercising. So it increases our mitochondrial biogenesis. So we create more of these mitochondria. It increases their effectiveness and their efficiency all at the same time while we actually do nothing, right? That sounds really cool. Now, if you're 70 and 80 pounds overweight, if you take this drug, it's not going to do much for you. This seems to be, and same with the 5-amino, it's very much like you have to be doing everything else right to get the benefit from these two particular drugs. And it can be especially beneficial what seems to be for that if you have hit a plateau in fat loss or you're trying to get that last little bit of fat off. Now, what people are using this for, because it increases fat oxidation so well, or our ability to burn fat, using this in combination with fasted cardio seems to be very beneficial for fat loss, right? As an adjunct to other things. All right. So when you look at these two, they very much play on mitochondrial function and our ability to be able to reproduce and create more mitochondria so that we just make more energy at rest. They're really cool and they may have benefits outside of just fat loss. So, like SLUPP332 in rat models has been used to for acute and chronic kidney disease really effectively because it reduces oxidative stress, which is awesome, right? Oxidative stress is pretty much what ages us. And oxidative stress seems to be one of the reasons why people get stuff like Ozempic face and Ozempic butt. But I'll touch on that in a little bit. And then finally, so tesamorelin. This is a GHRH receptor agonist. So it binds to growth hormone releasing receptors, excuse me. So it will naturally increase our endogenous production of growth hormone. And there's knock-on effects of there that will create IGF-1, which will increase protein synthesis, metabolism, lipolysis, all these really cool things. Now, where they found that, it's particularly effective at lowering visceral fat. So if you've got that deep lying fat around your organ, the stuff that's really metabolically damaging, tesamorelin seems to be really effective there. And the reason why they found that out is interesting. So in HIV patients, who the medication that they give to HIV patients caused a lot of lipodystrophy. So they started to deposit fat in places where they probably shouldn't. So when you saw people who were still eating the same calories but taking this HIV medication, they started to accumulate a lot of visceral fat. And when they gave them tesamorelin, they noticed that the visceral fat dropped dramatically. I believe it was like 20%. It was quite dramatic. So then obviously, the bodybuilders of the world began to realize how effective this could be. And it's used quite extensively and it's been around for quite a while. I haven't seen many studies outside of the HIV population, but anecdotally, it seems to work really well. And growth hormone seems to have a lot of benefits with longevity outside of just being effective for fat loss. So, like, these are probably the five at the moment, and there is other ones out there that we could talk about. There's like MOTSI, which is used, which can be quite effective as well. So there's stuff outside SS31 or is it SS32, like these other mitochondrial compounds, which seem to be really beneficial for fat loss as well. But I wanted to include these ones in particular. And then when we talk about dosages, now again, if you were to run all of this, I'll get onto retatrutide in a second. If you were to get onto any, if you were going to use all of this, I believe it would cost you about 1,200 bucks a month. So, like, even to run 5-amino at 100 to 150 milligrams would cost you about $160, $180 a month. The SLU would be about $200. And then everything starts to accumulate. Tesamorelin would be a few hundred dollars a month. So it does get really expensive, but we'll see in a second what kind of ways you guys could use them. In the research, tesamorelin seems to be 0.5 to 1 milligram daily. Now, I would have started on 0.25, but the tablets only came at 0.5. The jump here doesn't seem to warrant, like, the amount of fat loss you get from taking 0.5 to 1 doesn't seem to warrant the increase of dosage. So you'll only get a little bit more fat loss, but you'll get a hell of a lot more side effect. Retatrutide. And this is, we could have talked about Ozempic or tirzepatide, right? But I just wanted to use this one because it's the most recent. In the research, they were using 2, 4, and 8 milligrams. When I used it, I used 0.5 milligrams twice a week. So I used 1 milligram. That was it. And it was super effective at regulating my appetite. I mean, genuinely, like I always like to think about it as it turns off the noise. So, like, if I had a really busy day And food became something that I couldn't quite sit to organize for 8 hours. That was always my danger point for bad food. So if you put me in a restaurant, then I wouldn't be thinking about the steak and the salad anymore. I'd be thinking about like the calorie dense food. I want the starters, I want the dessert. Whereas this just takes that noise away. And it allowed me in particular to make better choices on a day-to-day basis. It's really interesting about retrotrutide. They're also starting to notice with these drugs, same with tesofensine actually, that it lowers the cravings for a lot of things. So like they'd may become an adjunct at some stage for addiction. So like they're noticing that people drink less alcohol, people smoke less cigarettes, and they're starting to think that may have effect in some of the harder drugs that people might use. Right. So some of the opioids as well. So it seems to have really cool things outside of that. The five amino, about 50 to 200 milligrams, depending. The SLU, 200 to 600 milligrams, depending. And then tesamorelin is 2 milligrams daily that can be placed wherever you want to put it. So if you want 1 milligram in the morning, 1 milligram in the evening, or 2 milligrams before bed, but away from food, preferably to get the most benefit. Now, is it all just upside? No, right? Let's be clear on that. There are side effects to these things, like tesofensine in particular. For me, like agitation, anxiety, lack of sleep, and even like in some of the more extreme cases with tesofensine, you see like suicidal ideation, right? Now, like I said, some people just get all the upside of it. So they feel good, they don't eat as much, they sleep well, and everything works out. So it's important to remember that. But I just, if I was to give anecdotal my own experience, I wouldn't try tesofensine. Retrotrutide, there's a lot of side effects noted, right? So you'll see constipation, diarrhea, reflux, increased heart rate can happen with it. And then some of the more extreme stuff that you saw with the initial Ozempics was stuff like pancreatitis. You saw gallstones, you saw gastroparesis, quite serious stuff. Now, that was probably with the higher dosages, using it for long periods of time, right? But it's not to be ignored when you start to use these things. Like with the 5-amino and the SLU, it doesn't seem to be much right now. These seem to have more upside than downside for sure. But again, it's still early days and it's only in rat studies. So we don't know how long these can be taken for. With tesofensine retra or tesamorelin, like they've been studies for at least 6 months. With this, we have no idea, right? So it seems that there's no downside, but there may be. Tesamorelin, the main thing you'd want to be concerned about here is like with any growth hormone promoting drug, growth hormone is not, it's obviously anabolic, but it's anabolic towards everything. So like if you had undetected cancer, for example, tesamorelin may be an issue because it may increase the proliferation of cancer cells, right? So it's always not necessarily important to pre-screen for it, but it's important to keep in mind that these things need to be cycled on and off. So I wouldn't use these for really long periods of time. Like tesamorelin seems to be about 6 to 8 weeks with the same amount of time off, right? 5-amino doesn't seem to last, its effects don't seem to last for much more than a month. SLU, we don't know. These have been done for 6 months and a year until the weight is lost. Look for a minimal effective dose with them, right? Now, where would you put these drugs? If it's a prep protocol, or I would probably put this again as like a protocol of like stubborn fat. So like if you're like already using low calories and it's not working effectively, some sort of appetite suppressant with 5-amino-1-MQ and SLU to give you that push through. And then if you're like, if you need to lose 100 pounds, then I'd probably look at like an appetite suppressant and tesamorelin. Like these probably aren't for you in that circumstance. So like there is protocols for different situations and you could rotate between both protocols depending on what you want to achieve, but you wouldn't want to use all of them at once. It would just become overly expensive. And then the side effects that come with some of them, you might not be able to place because you're taking a lot at once. That's my talking done. Now, if you guys want to go through any of the other peptides that you guys have heard about, or if you have any questions about these ones in particular, let me know. I'm happy to go through any of them. Mo, doing your cardio, my man. Has anybody got any questions on what we just went through, or has anybody got any questions on other peptides? I may not know the answer to all of them because there's an awful lot out there. What's the safest and most studied? The most studied is the GLP-1s, definitely. So, like Ozempic would probably be the most studied in terms of fat loss. To say that's is that the safest? Questionable, because there are side effects with it. So the safest would be probably the 5-amino, in my opinion, or the SLU, but they're not nearly as studied, right? So, like, it's kind of trying to get. Trying to get the balance right here. But yeah, so I'd say probably the most studied aren't necessarily the safest right now. Has anybody else anything they want to go through in particular with peptides? It can be anything nutritional based, don't worry, but if there's anything peptide that you want to discuss, we can go through it. Actually, with Ben's here as well, he'll know
Yeah,
some.
Craig. So first, I just want to say you did an incredible job, man. And so, guys, I've been studying these peptides for years, probably 10 years. And I'm super skeptical of everything. I think everything is needs to be examined a lot more than mo before most people will try it. And these ones, in general, as Craig was saying, other than co being cost prohibitive, seem like there's relatively minimal side effects. Even speaking of the growth hormones, secretagogues, everyone I asked says there was one study and it's all been refuted around cancer being proliferated with growth hormones, secretagogues. So, yeah, it's the type of thing where if you're going to do it, you commit to 3 months, you go all in for 3 months, and then you stop, right? Don't overdo it, because it obviously is a big expense. I've tried the 5-amino-1-MQ. 5-amino, as Greg said, seems to work best. So people who have lost quite a bit of weight and feel stalled, those would be the people who use best for 5-amino. Sloop, I've never used. Yeah, Greg did. That's Greg. Incredible job, man. Good, very, very well done. And yeah, the reason he chose these five is because they work. These are the five that actually work. There's 100 different fat loss peptides that don't do anything. These are the five that actually work.
The SLU is an interesting one. So I'm trying it at the moment. And I noticed fatigue resiliency with it for sure, even with weightlifting. So I trained, and Gav always tries to like punish me when I train with him. And today in particular, I was fasted as well when I went to train, and I just didn't get that same fatigue that I would normally when I train with him. So I definitely see benefit to it. It's again, it's just expensive, man. Like
You
to
say
run.
Gav's getting soft? Is that what you're saying?
What's that?
Did Gav's getting soft? Is that
Yeah,
what
I think I'm pulling them down.
Andrew?
Andrew?
Hey, thanks, Greg. I jumped on about 10 minutes late, so I may have missed some discussion on this, but listened to the Huberman podcast on this a couple weeks back. So yeah, he spent a lot of time talking about some different ones in particular. You can't get the BPC one currently in the US, but they've substituted the what is it? Pentadecaarginate. And he talks about that for like tissue healing and recovery in general. I was curious if you had experience with BPC or that the pentadecaarginate as a replacement. Seems like he's putting that in everything. This doctor has a clinic in Charleston, South Carolina.
The replacement, no idea, genuinely. So with BPC, and Ben can obviously lead into this as well, I've used it relatively extensively with clients, whether that's for, I use it generally because I deal with a lot of gastrointestinal issues, with really, really effective, it was really, really effective with gastrointestinal healing as well. Ben, you've obviously used it with clients for like tissue injury more so as well.
Yep. So I use it personally, and the benefit, it's remarkable. I use it probably 30 days every 3 or 4 months, just for general healing. If I'm ramping up my training, it'll accelerate healing. Seems like the safety profile is incredible. So I'm very familiar with Dr. Conover. So his head nurse practitioner used to be in our coaching program for 12 or 18, maybe longer, probably 18 months.
So I'm very familiar with all his protocols. We've talked quite a bit on it. Very smart guy. But yeah, no, I've never tried that replacement either.
That sucks, man. BPC's already gone from the States now, is it?
Can still get it.
Yeah. So like Matt's asking, how is the safety for each one determined? So it'll go through phases of trials. So like you'll have phase one, phase two, phase three trials before it gets to market. And they have to obviously figure if it works, number one, for what they're trying to target. And then obviously the downside of it, they have to figure out whether that's worth it at the same time. So like with like you hear with Ozempic, the problem with it was is it just bashes one receptor. So it's why Retra, the newer version, seems to show with less side effects. But there was some like things that you would definitely worry about with Ozempic initially with the higher dosages for long periods of time. So like pancreatitis is no joke, right? And it was something like 2 to 3% of people who used Ozempic long term ended up with pancreatitis, gastroparesis, or gallstones. And they're no joke, right? It's like that needs to be taken seriously. However, I think with lower dose, and I know Jay Campbell talks about it quite a bit of using like whatever it is, like 0.5 every other day, for example, probably doesn't come with the same side effects that we'll see in the chronically obese client. There he is. Experience with Ipamoralin. I don't actually. I've only ever used tesamorelin. I've never used Ipamoralin. Ipamoralin, I know, targets growth hormone slightly differently. So it does it through the ghrelin receptor. And they do tend to be combined to get more of an effect. And I believe, Ben, you can back me up or don't. But Ipamoralin tends to be a little bit more longevity based.
I've never heard that. Not sure why that would be.
But they'll hit growth hormone in slightly different ways. So they tend to be combined a lot of the time for increased benefit or efficacy. So who's gonna trial some tesofensine? Have you tried it, Ben?
No.
Oh my God.
Yeah, no. I don't like the idea of feeling sketchy or anxious or whatever. Like, nah, not my speed, man.
Sketchy is the best way to put it. I was afraid of my own shadow.
Yeah, I'd like to try the retatrutide and then maybe the sloop.
Sloop, man, I like, man. Retatrutide, I can say, like, I'm using it at the moment. And cognitively, I'm way better. Way better. I don't know whether that's just like whether it's the GLP's effect on the brain or whether it's my blood sugar is way more regulated. But I do feel a lot better cognitively with it as well. Now, when you see, and you guys will probably have seen it, like with those drugs, you tend to see massive drop-offs in muscle mass in the studies. Like 30 to 40% of the total weight loss comes from muscle. It's not necessarily the drug that's doing that. It's that you're taking people with poor diets and you're making them eat 500 to 1200 calories a day of carbohydrate and fat combination with no activity, no weight training, and no protein. So that tends to be the reason why people lose muscle mass when they use those drugs. It's not necessarily the drug in and of itself that's causing those problems.
I'm always concerned about the rebound. I'm curious when you get there, what that looks like.
Yeah, like so I did try and find what research they had on like if you're using these drugs to increase those incretins and those hormones, what happens at the end? Do they just come back naturally? And it seems that they do relatively quickly, but we'll find out because I've heard people say they get horrible rebound from it. So like I'm not 100% sure. There is natural occurring things to increase GLP-1 coming out the other end. Like people talk about like using bitters, glutamine tends to do it as well. So there might be a way that we can create something to, and I'll try it when I come off, to see how beneficial they actually are. Or is it the fact that people have just lost a significant amount of weight and they haven't eaten a lot of food for a long time and then the appetite suppression is gone? I don't know.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll find out. I'll find out soon enough. Has anybody else got any questions or any peptides that they're interested in or anything that they've seen that they want clarification on. Doesn't necessarily have to be around peptides. It can be about anything.
Greg, I was curious on the peptide, the BPC. What is that typically used for? Is that for like muscle growth or for healing?
Healing predominantly. So it increases angiogenesis. So what you find with a lot of these injuries is blood flow to that area tends to get really restricted. So the use of BPC tends to increase angiogenesis and healing in that way. So it's mostly tissue, and I believe it works with ligaments and bone as well. So it's like, so I've never used it on myself, but with clients I've used it with, or like what I've heard anecdotal, it can be quite miraculous in its effects. Now, I've also heard some people saying they got no benefits from it, right? And it tends to be the way with some of these things, where some people will say they got no benefit, fine, but I think the upside is probably worth trying it.
Okay, I saw the website with some of the peptides. They were offering BPC 157, and they combine it a mixture with TB 500. I'm not sure. I guess what that benefit would be.
TB500 tends to do fairly similar, slightly different mechanisms. Ben, do you know what the difference in mechanism
Very
is?
different mechanisms, but you're right, similar targets. Yeah. So
So
they're
it'd be
doing.
like for healing injury.
So the way I frame them in my mind, one heals tissues and one heals soft tissues. So one heals like muscles, skin, and one heals like ligaments, tendons, and joints.
Okay.
So it tends to be how it's sold for a lot of the time, is the combination of both.
Okay. I was curious on the five amino and the SLUP. Is that something you would take like with food? Is there something you can do dietary wise to mitigate some of the side effects, or is it just to take an empty stomach and it just is what it is?
With SLU, it seems, in particular, it seems to be better to take it fasted because it will increase fat oxidation, or your ability to be able to burn fat effectively. It seems to be most effective taken fasted. Some people have mentioned gastrointestinal disturbances with it. I didn't experience any of that, and I'm susceptible. Like if I take something that doesn't agree with me gastrointestinal, I'll know all about it. But I didn't find any downside to using it. Now, it's literally been like 5 days since I've started taking it, so maybe it'll get worse. But I do notice maybe a placebo, but I do notice a little bit of increased energy as well when I take it. But yeah, it should be taken fasted. The five amino, I don't think it's going to be as a big deal. It also seems to be better absorbed when you combine it with fat. So it probably may be better off taking it with food in that circumstance.
Okay.
But they, like those two in particular, seem to have wide-ranging effects outside of just fat loss, man. Like it's really interesting. Like I have a feeling whether they refine them or they actually do more research on them, but like I think they're going to be used in the longevity space relatively quickly just because of what they do.
Like you said, which one was you said you had better cognitive ability? Is that the
Oh, yeah.
retruded triad?
Retrotrutide. So it took me a while to learn that
Yes.
as well. It took me a while to learn that. Yeah, I noticed it particularly. Yeah. Now, whether that's because like it lowers, like it's been known to lower brain inflammation, GLP-1 does. So is it that? Is it the fact that like I'm also eating much like I'm eating 100% on plan instead of like shifting between 80 and 90%? Or is it that it's just regulating my blood sugar really well? It could be any of the above. But I've noticed a lot of benefit from it. So like people are using it to actually create new habit because it turns off the noise a little bit. It allows people, like if you use it, I think, effectively to actually create new eating habits and this new eating style, I think it could be really beneficial long term for a lot of people.
Have you heard any, I guess, problems with combining that? I know there's a lot of different ADHD medications out there where they're trying to silence the noise and help with focus. Does that have any kind of a, or are you aware of any kind of a complication that presents or an enhancement?
I wouldn't think of any crossover particularly. Obviously, I'd be very wary of using tesofensine if you're using ADHD medication as well, because that'll increase dopamine at the same time. So, like, if you're using something that is a dopamine agonist, so that increases dopamine, and then you block the breakdown of it. That would drive you to mania, I would have thought. But I wouldn't think the retatrutide would have any particular issues crossover, but I'm not 100% sure. So I would say don't exactly take my advice for that, but.
No, I'm kind of the same mentality of Ben. It's, life is stressful enough to take something to automatically just increase anxiety and stress. Yeah, I'll veer away from that one.
Oh man, I know like there was a couple of people on like in our community that have taken testosterone, and they didn't get any of the same side effects as me, right? So whether genetically I'm just susceptible to it, that could be the case, but like I found it horrific when I tried it, horrific. So I would probably advise most people to stay clear. Anybody else? Oh, one thing I wanted to mention, when people talk about Ozempic face or Ozempic butt, it seems to be like, so like there's a guy, Dr. Brian Walsh released something on it where he was speaking about why that might be the case for a lot of people who lose a dramatic amounts of weight really quickly. And it may be due to the fact that we store a lot of toxins in our fat cells. So like heavy metals, pesticides, all these things. And maybe the dramatic liberation of those could lead to a lot of oxidative stress and lead to that aged look that you tend to see in people that are taking Ozempic. So something to keep in mind. So like he would always want to run a detox protocol at the same time as using some of these drugs for dramatic weight loss anyway. Just
Greg,
worth noting.
incredible work, man. Incredible job as always. Jens, hopefully you receive some value from Greg's wisdom today. And he puts a lot of time and work into these. So Greg, I appreciate you, man. Anyone else have questions before we wrap?
Ben, I would just ask, in terms of procuring these, I know it's different depending on where you live, but would you be pretty confident in recommending Dr. Conover's clinic and any products they have?
Yeah, yes and no, man. His margins are really high. Like he really jacks up the prices. So the way he sends them to you, like he mixes them, puts them in syringes, and sends you the pre-mixed syringes. So it's not the most cost effective. So all of his clients are tend to be, not just similar to a lot of the guys in our coaching, but tend to be a little like people who just have disposable income. It's not going to be super cost effective, I would say. So limitless nootropics is one that Jay Campbell recommends, and I've vetted them pretty extensively. They got pretty good stuff. They tend to be cheaper than Peptide Sciences. So Peptide Sciences is kind of the standard. Limitless nootropics, I see them as being equally as well procured. And for Sloop, what's the website, Greg? Regenex or something?
Yeah, actually, no, Sarah sent it to me the other day. I have it here. I'll chuck it in the chat as soon as we're done.
I think.
Focus Biomolecules.
No, it's Regenex or something. I sent it to you the other day.
Okay. For Des, if you're like in the UK, Biolab seems to be fairly reputable.
Another one just gave me a shout out called Cosmic Nootropics. They're based in the UK. Not sure that they have Sloop, but they got a lot of different random stuff over there. I'm not sure where I put it. All right, Andrew, are you in the group chat? I'll just drop it in there.
I am. Yeah, thank you.
No problem. Hello, buddy. Gentlemen, have a great day. Have a great evening wherever you are in the world. Keep crushing. Greg, I appreciate you, man. Get some rest.
Thank you, fellas.